and Honduras being a poor country for so long, that's literally the story of our life. Like Honduras is story is dangerous, it's violent, and there are gangs, and it's also poor, you know? And this is one of the things that we want to change with Prospera and everyone involved in it. Also really believes in this project, and we also believe that this project could potentially save Honduras too.
Hey everybody, welcome back. We are here today with Zuzel Abigail Ramos. She is coming to us live from Honduras, our first guest from Honduras, which is quite exciting. I met Zuzel, I think it was now about 2 or 3 weeks ago in Washington, D.C. at LibertyCon, which was an event that was organized by Students for Liberty, an organization that she has some affiliation with. Zuzel is based in a city called Prospera in Honduras. If you haven't heard about that, you're sort of in for a treat. She told me a little bit about Prospera was in person, and I wanted to dig in a little bit deeper on the pod, which is why she's here with us today. It's a startup city, and I'll let her explain what that means in just a moment. She also works with an organization called Amity Age, and this organization does Bitcoin mining and Bitcoin education within Prospera. So it educates people in Honduras about what Bitcoin is while also mining. And I think that's what I know of her thus far, but I want to hand the mic over to you. Please let the audience know what I might have missed and introduce yourself if you don't mind.
Hi, thank you for having me. Yes, my name is Zuzel. I live in Prospera, which is a special economic zone based in Roatan, Honduras. Roatan is an island in the Caribbean, super beautiful. I encourage you to come. And I am currently working at the first Bitcoin education center in Central America and based here in Roatan, Honduras.
Awesome. Thank you. For just so that the audience knows, actually, this wasn't, I didn't intend for this to be my first question, but I met some people from Honduras in DC 2 or 3 weeks ago, and they all spoke very good English. Could you start by explaining why that is the case, just given that you were doing this interview in English and you're coming to us from Honduras?
Yes, actually Honduras is, one of the countries in Central America with the highest, bilingual, schools. So it's most of people in Honduras speak English, especially in the island in Roatan. Actually, since they used to be a British colony, a lot of people that grew up here, English was their first language. I'm not from the island, so that's not my case. But yeah, definitely we also are very, in Honduras, like pop culture from US is super relevant for us. I think we grew up basically admiring everything that US did. So we just had to learn the language too. But also it's good because since there's so many people that speak English in Honduras, there's a lot of call centers that are here and people get to have good jobs and stuff like that.
Interesting. Yeah, you told me a bit about that. That's super interesting. Can you also just let us know what part of Honduras are you from? Where are you coming from before you came to Prospera?
Yes, I grew up in San Pedro Sula, which is like the industrial area of Honduras. So there's a lot of business and stuff like this.
Very cool. All right, so let's dive into what Prospera is. So Prospera, from what I understand, is startups, kind of like a startup city in a special economic zone in Honduras. It's based on this Caribbean island. From what I've seen in pictures, it's absolutely gorgeous. Who started Prospera? What is it? And any other information you could provide us?
Yeah, basically Prospera was a project that started in 2013. And the person who had the idea, it's called Eric Greenman. He's the CEO of Prospera. And it was like, I think it was until 2020 that started like kind of coming along with, they started hiring and they started building on the island. So it's still, as you said, like it's still a startup city. So everything is starting, but I'm so glad to be like one of the first, you know, residents, batch of residents of Prospera.
Yeah, that's super cool. Could you explain a little bit about what a startup city is and what privileges you get for being in a special economic zone?
Yeah, so a special economic zone is a territory where you have different laws than the rest of the country, but you still are ruled by the Constitution of Honduras, but with different laws. So basically the hierarchy, is that how you say it? Okay,
perfect.
So hierarchy of the laws is international treaties, then Constitution of Honduras, and then Prospera Sede laws. So Prospera Sede laws is very, very friendly with investors, and that makes it very attractive for people that want to come here, do business, and they get some tax benefits that they wouldn't get if they were in Honduras territory. So, for example, me, as a person that works in Prospera, I only have to pay 1% of income tax, the gross income tax, 1%. Wow. Which is very good. And for the sales tax, if you're a business and you're selling something in Prospera, it's only 2.5%. In Honduras is 15%.
Wow.
So it's that benefit.
Do you think that something like this can only work on a small scale in something like Prospera, or is there a vision to scale it, or do you think it can scale, or do you think it's better in more of a contained sort of region?
I think it can really scale. Like, for example, one of the good examples that we have is Shenzhen in China, or Hong Kong too. These are special economic zones that have demonstrated the potential that they have in the economic part for a country. And Honduras being a poor country for so long, that's literally the story of our life. Like, Honduras' story is dangerous, it's violent, and there are gangs, and it's also poor, you know? And this is one of the things that we want to change with Prospera, and everyone involved in it also really believes in this project. And we also believe that this project could potentially save Honduras too.
Amazing. That's amazing. Super, super inspiring. Speaking of dangerous, the island that you're on, where Prospera is located, used to be a destination for pirates. And I say that like real pirates, actual pirates. Can you tell us a little bit about that history?
Yeah, there's a lot of pirate history going on in Roatan. One of the most famous pirates was Henry Morgan. He was here in Roatan. And also there are a lot of descendants of pirates on the island, which is very funny. One of my coworkers actually is a descendant of a pirate. And it's so fun to have that, you know. And we also compare, like, the pirates, we compare it like as, you know, they were like doing this revolution in historic times and going against the status quo. And that's also what we're doing with Prospera and with Bitcoin too.
Yeah, we're going to get into Bitcoin in just a second. But yeah, I appreciate that. Is what is like a descendant of a pirate like in real life? Are they nice? Are they mean? What is your coworker like?
Oh my God, I really love her. She's amazing. She's a sweetheart. And cool. It's just funny for me. Every time I introduce her, she's like, oh, she's descendant of a pirate. So it's like also cool.
I would surely ask to take a selfie with a descendant of a pirate. No question about that. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's dive back into what you just said. So why is Prospera plus Bitcoin such a match made in heaven? Why is that such a great pair?
Well, Prospera, it's also a hub for innovation. There are a lot of projects going on here, like health projects. For example, we're currently having a pop-up city called Vitalia. You are welcome to research it more. Vitalia is a pop-up city. There are hundreds of people coming here and experience the life. What is it like, the life in Prospera? And they're coming here to create also business ideas. You know, there's all kinds of people coming that they have like startups, they're into the tech, they're into longevity, they're into crypto, Bitcoin. So it's really interesting to see all these minds, like genius minds coming to Roatan. But so Prospera, as I was saying, it's also an innovation hub where you can come since it's very interesting that the way that they you could do a business and you can choose the law that you want the business to be registered in. So you're like, oh, I want Hong Kong law, I want Singapore law, you can do it here.
Interesting.
So it's very interesting. Like we have a business here and my boss is from Slovakia, so he could choose that he wanna be like register the business with Slovakian laws. You know, it's so crazy. And one of the other things about Prospera is that you can choose the currency you want to use. You're not forced to use dollars. You're not forced to use Lempira, which is the currency of Honduras. You can choose whatever you want to pay taxes, to register a business. And it's really interesting because they recently just announced that they have adopted Bitcoin as a unit of account, which means that if you have a business in Prospera, you don't have to convert all of the transactions you do in your business. If you receive only Bitcoin payments, you don't have to do the conversion. You can do it directly on the Bitcoin using it as a value unit of account. So I just think it was like a perfect, it was a perfect timing because my boss came to Roatan just to visit the island. You know, this is a tourist place. But then when he came, somebody told him about Prospera. So he got there, he met the CEO of Prospera, and he had this idea for so many years about opening up a Bitcoin location center. And he was like, I love this idea and I will give you this amazing building that we have and you can have it and you do this here. And then it was like, oh my God, every time he tells this story, it's so like, it feels like faith because he was like, okay, so I'm going to do it. Like, this is what I'm going to do. And then 1 month later, we had a Bitcoin location center here.
Wow. That's super inspiring. I want to rewind a little bit back to the beginning of what you just said, but I'm going to come back to some of what you said in the latter part of that as well. You talked about genius minds coming to Prospera. I recently saw Balaji Srinivasan, a quite an intensely intelligent human being, was just in Prospera for an event. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, unfortunately, I was not here during that, but I did saw the tweets and checked it out. This event is Vitalia, which is happening right now. As I was saying, it's a pop-up city, so everyone can come and get to know Prospera and what are they doing. And they have events like every day. There's something happening, which I think is also very cool. They're doing event about longevity, about art. They're doing like... actually, you can come if you come here and you can do your own event because it's that decentralized. Mm-hmm. They have like a platform where you can upload your events and there's a lot of people co-working together, living together and experiencing what Prospera feels like. So it has called the attention of a lot of very famous people. Also, Vitalik was one of the speakers for one of the conferences that they had. Wow. So yeah, it's a lot of things happening.
That's amazing. Very cool. The latter part of it, Bitcoin as a unit account, you just said something that I don't often hear people say in the Bitcoin space, which is that you could pay your taxes in Bitcoin if you want to. And I think when people think about Bitcoin, and I'm speaking about those who are a bit more unfamiliar with it, they think about it the way that Jamie Dimon from Chase Bank talks about it, which is, Bitcoin is a way to avoid taxes. Bitcoin is a way to blah, blah, whatever he, you know, nonsense he sort of spouts But in El Salvador, that's the same case as well. You can pay your taxes in it as well. So I think if you could extend that, not that it might need a lot of more, not that it needs a lot more explanation, but are people comfortable paying taxes in Bitcoin? And is it just as easy as paying taxes in any other currency?
It's even easier.
Because, tell us, please. Yeah,
because there's a platform that you use to pay your taxes and everything that you report in Prospera. It's called eProspera. You can actually become a resident today in like 15 minutes. You're a resident. Anyways, the thing is that you go through this process and it's so easy. Like, I know, because I'm not an American, but I have American friends that tell me how of a, you know, how difficult it is to fill up your tax form. And then it's just so much work and like brain power. And for this, like, I could be doing my taxes right now and talking to you or watching a TV series. And it was so easy for me. I did it for the first time last year. I have to do it again soon. But it's just, you go to the platform, you select the currency that you want to pay your taxes. So I'm telling you that I did it with Bitcoin, but I could do it with any currency. And then I pay my taxes. And they have like a QR code, and it's just as easy as send Bitcoin, you know, and we both know how easy that is. Yep. So it was a great experience for me, that I was living in a place where I could pay my taxes with Bitcoin.
Fascinating. And I think I've seen a little bit of this, obviously, in Salvador. I think in Switzerland, somebody was trying something like this out. I think it was in Lugano. And I think it's really important for people to understand that it's not, the point of Bitcoin is not just tax, you know, I'm not going to say just, not tax evasion. It's just, it's when people discuss Bitcoin, they're discussing the nature of money, not necessarily the distribution or redistribution of money, which means that people who use Bitcoin are not completely averse to any taxes existing whatsoever. They just see it as a better money than a lot of the fiat currencies that exist in the world.
Yeah. And definitely it is a better money, but for me, it's like living on the Bitcoin standard. Yeah. So paying my taxes in Bitcoin, paying my rent in Bitcoin, which I also do, paying, you know, every restaurant I go in Bitcoin. And some people tell me, like, why would you do that if you should, like, save it? But I get paid in Bitcoin, which is, like, a very good benefit for me because it means that, you know, I have to live, so I have to pay for rent like a normal person. I will not save all of my salary, but I do save the rest. Like, I only use what I need, and then the rest stays in Bitcoin.
That makes a lot of sense, and it's very, what you're saying is very similar to what I've heard from people who live in what get termed the circular economy. So Bitcoin Beach in El Zonte in Salvador, and Bitcoin Nakasi in South Africa, and other places around the world. Obviously people save a portion of it, they spend another portion of it. But one of the dynamics about Bitcoin that's quite interesting is that, you know, the more people that are using Bitcoin, the bigger the network gets, the more valuable the assets on the network get. Meaning the more people who, thinking about Bitcoin as a network, this is called Metcalfe's law, you know, the more it sort of spreads, the more valuable it becomes. So in a way, when you are using Bitcoin, especially if you're using it with people who are just, you know, who are new to it and are, you know, fresh to sort of accepting it, you are in a way sort of creating more value for the Bitcoin that you are saving, because now it's something that more and more people are using. So it's a little bit more abstract to look at it that way, because obviously the meme is to get your Bitcoin and to hodl it. But for some people like yourself who are paid in Bitcoin, that's not a complete reality. You could sell it and, you know, go back to having some fiat and use that. But if it's just easier to live on a Bitcoin standard, and in my opinion, it will be more fruitful to live your life that way, then you're in a great scenario. And I'm assuming, just based on the way Prospera and things are structured, there's no capital gains or anything if you wanted to go in and out of different currencies from Bitcoin.
No capital gains, no.
Okay. Yeah, that's a magical, beautiful thing. I'm coming to you here from New York, the financial capital of the world, and this is the farthest thing from the reality here. So So let's dive into the latter part of what you just said. So someone came along, said, here's this building. You can start educating people about Bitcoin in this building. And so from what I understand, this might have been the beginning of Amity Age, which is the educational platform there. I didn't know it's the first educational platform in Central America. I thought it was the first one in Honduras for Bitcoin. So please tell us a little bit about how that works. How many students do you have? How many people partake in this sort of stuff? What do day-to-day activities look like, et cetera?
Yeah, sure. Well, I just want to add that we have, AmityH already existed because we're having also, operations in Paraguay. We do mining there. So the mining that we do also, like, some of the profits are allocated into the education that we do in Roatan, because of course, you know, the operations in Roatan are not for free. We have to pay rent, we have to pay salaries, and everything else. But the education that we give to the people in Honduras, we try to do it mostly for free. Like 90% of education is mostly for free, because we go to schools in Roatan that are usually public, and we teach them to the kids about financial literacy and also Bitcoin. So my day-to-day, I am in charge of the education department in Roatan. So my day-to-day is just like planning when is going to be my next workshop. We're introducing also workshops every week on Tuesdays. I had to make connections with the schools in Roatan to schedule workshops and diplomas, Bitcoin diplomas too. We had an alliance with My First Bitcoin in El Salvador, and they're doing the Bitcoin diplomas. I'm sure you know that. And yep, we are also doing the Bitcoin diplomas. I'm actually part of the Lightnode network that they have too. So that is also something that I'm focused on, trying to come up with new ideas of workshop. We recently, actually yesterday, we started a workshop on privacy, because, you know, of course we want to teach about Bitcoin, but there's also some things that are related to Bitcoin that are also important. For example, teaching kids about privacy on social media. So we also did that, started a workshop yesterday that is gonna be for 4 weeks. It's our first one in that topic, so we're excited about that. So yeah, that is my work, working on curriculum, working on teaching, working on alliances with schools here and also internationally.
Amazing. I mean, super inspiring. My background is I have my master's in education and I taught for 12 years. So super inspiring to hear such subject matter being taught. I actually write educational content for University of Cambridge, their textbooks for English learners. And they've asked me to do things that are a little bit more outside of the box. So I write about things like Bitcoin and blah, blah, blah. But even writing about some of this stuff you're talking about, they're like, no, we can't do it for this reason, that reason. And it's like, so one of the reasons I'm so fascinated in having these conversations with people like yourself is because it's just further validation that the old ways of doing things are going, they're just stagnant, they're old, they're not challenging the way people think. Whereas what you're doing is really at the forefront of what I hope the world looks like. You know, I think startup cities plus Bitcoin circular economies, all of this stuff that's happening at the ground level where people are making the rules for their community, I think that this is the only counter to the WEF, to authoritarianism, where people have more control, and not only control, but say over what's happening at the local level, what's going on in places and startup cities like Prospera, circular economies. I think that these are going to become models, and you're going to see a lot more of this stuff popping up around the world, because I think the successes coming out of there, but even just the quality of thought, the stuff that you're talking about, you know, it, for people who are not familiar with Bitcoin or some of these concepts, this is going to sound very new to them. We're almost crazy. How can a place even exist if taxes are that low? It can. It's just that people there take responsibility. They're thinking, they're participants in their society, their voices count, mm-hmm. all of this kind of stuff. And in places like where I'm at in New York, people are quite detached from all of these processes. It's quite inspiring what you're doing and what's happening in Prospera. And I do plan to visit. I know you have invited me and I deeply appreciate that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I would also be remiss not to bring up the fact that we met at an event called LibertyCon, which was put on by Students for Liberty. Before I got to LibertyCon, I did not know what it was. I didn't know what Students for Liberty was. I had no idea. I was working with another woman who said, I think you should come and speak at this event. And I came to speak because I believe that the panel that I spoke on was fighting Bitcoin. I'm sorry. We're not fighting Bitcoin. We're here. We like Bitcoin. Fighting oppression through Bitcoin. And I'll speak on that topic in front of any group of people. But I learned a lot about Students for Liberty since. The last guest we had on this podcast was Jorge Girasati, which is the director for Alumni for Liberty, people who mm-hmm. graduate from Students for Liberty. And I'm learning, you know, a little bit about how Students for Liberty is sort of spreading the idea of classical liberalism, sometimes referred to as libertarianism. I don't like that word because I think it means something different to everyone who hears it. Classical mm-hmm. liberalism is just simply, you know, free markets, free minds. It doesn't mean that we live in a complete state of anarchy. As you said in Prospera, there are taxes and there is people do coordinate and there is a government, but it's more focus on individual freedoms, individuals' ability to better their own lives. So could you speak about your experience with Students for Liberty, what you learned from it? And also, was it more that you found Students for Liberty because you agreed with what they were teaching, or you sort of found Students for Liberty, became interested, and then learned a lot about some of the concepts that they teach and then employed them in your own life?
Well, this is a funny story because cool. I used to be a leftist.
Okay.
Yeah. I was against Students for Liberty for so long. So my family, my family was always like, they had a lot of leftist ideas. So I grew up with these ideas and I was like, they make sense in my mind, but something is not clicking, you know, okay. And you're growing up with this. And I remember how I used to fight with my dad a lot because of this topic. And, it was like this for so long. And then I went to college, and in college, I heard about Students for Liberty. So it was like, what is that? And like, it sounds very good, right? It's like Students for Liberty. It's like,
yeah, right,
everyone loves liberty and freedom. So it sounds so good. But then I started to listen to what they were saying. And actually Yvette, that you also met, she's my best friend. And at that moment, she was trying to convince me to join Students for Liberty because she went to one of their events and she was like, oh my God, like it's really cool. And, you know, it has a lot of potential. And I was like doubting. But then when I started going with her, it was like, oh my God, like they are totally right. And this makes more sense than anything that I've learned in my whole life. So I started also reading a lot of books in that era. Because I wanted to know more. Like I had like a glimpse of it, and then I wanted to know more, I started with Mises, and then with Hayek, and then Ayn Rand. So then it was like, okay, I am a libertarian. And I know you said you don't like that word, but for me, it's like libertarianism is like a spectrum. So you could be a classic liberal, or you could be an anarchist, and both of them are libertarian. So I do not consider myself an anarchist. I love everything that has to do with freedom. And I think one of my favorite authors is Ayn Rand. And she talks a lot about this, individualism and how important it is. And you take care of yourself and that you try to find your own happiness in this life. So, yeah, I love this. I'm wearing a
Oh, nice. Less marks, more mices.
So, yeah, I am part of this crazy group, because for some people, libertarians are super crazy. So I am part of this group, and I have been since college. So almost 6 years now.
That's great. And I think I don't think libertarians are super crazy. I think that there's super crazy people on all sides of the on all different political spectrums, like on all different ends of the political spectrum. And I think that from what I understand about classical liberalism, it does incorporate certain tenets that are often associated with the left. Like, for example, feel free to have whatever sexual preference you want. It's very much anti-racist. And I think I said this in the last interview with Jorge. I heard plenty of people at LibertyCon talking about how they don't like the Donald Trumps of the world or the Bolsonaros of the world because of some of their authoritarian tendencies. So I think that there's often more nuance than people discuss. But I have 46 pages left in Atlas Shrugged. I'm just about to finish it, the Ayn Rand book. And I read The Fountainhead about 20 years ago. I think most people misunderstand Ayn Rand. Someone said this best. I spoke with an economist in Brazil the other day, a friend of mine, who actually she's quite different from a lot of the people I interview, in that I think she works, it's not exactly the central bank. Maybe it's a division of the central bank there. So obviously it's quite the opposite of the Bitcoin squad or whatever. But, yeah. She said, I think that oftentimes Ludwig von Mises, who you had just referenced, or Friedrich Hayek, people who proposed, I'll say alternative ways or the opposite way of Keynesianism or modern monetary theory, just ways that promoted more individual liberty, they're often misunderstood. She put it best. She said there's a lot of really good ideas in those texts. She said sometimes the fans, what did she say? Sometimes like the band is good, but the fans ruin it or something like that. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And because I think because of this, I grew up with some friends who were more libertarian. Libertarians tend to really dig into what they believe, and if they believe it, they really do their homework. So they also, I think, have a tendency to be very firm in their stance because they've done their work on it. So yeah. I think that there's a piece of that there. So it's sort of hard to be a libertarian if you're sort of all about it, because much like Bitcoin, you're going to go down the rabbit hole if you really believe in it, and you're going to keep reading and you're going to keep learning. And then you're obviously going to have something to say. So this has been my experience on it. I'm in the middle of reading both the Atlas Shrugged and Human Action, the famous Ludwig von Mises book right now. Taking on two 1,000-page books at the same time was a very strange idea, but this is what I did. But they are, I think what I'm learning from these books, there are really, really beautiful, there are really beautiful ideas in these books. And I think they're often just not presented in the right light. And what I liked about someone like Jorge, and what I liked about a lot of the people I met at Students for Liberty, is that I don't think things like empathy and caring for other people are mutually inexclusive, or they don't, I think these things can absolutely work in societies that are more libertarian. They do work. People tend to actually work more closely together because their voice is part of the political process and all of that stuff. So I think that this is often not talked about, and I'm not here promoting libertarianism, and I'm not saying I've gone over to like whatever side. I actually don't feel an association with any side of the spectrum, which I think inherently, because I'm anti-authoritarianism, does make me a bit more libertarian, in that I'm very open-minded when it comes to sexual preference, whatever you want to do with your life. I've grown very disillusioned with the left. It feels sort of like we have a uniparty, the spectrum of the left and the right, at least in the United States. It all feels sort of like the difference between them in some ways is cents as compared to dollars, or maybe sats compared to Bitcoin, to make a different analogy. Mm-hmm. It's not much of a difference. So I think I'm learning more, and I think Students for Liberty was a nice introduction to it, because a lot of the people I met were very kind. I didn't meet any like raging lunatics or anything, but you do meet some very sharp people. Libertarians tend to be extremely well-read and very sharp. So I'm sorry about the rant. If you wanted to comment on anything, please step in there. No.
I totally agree, and I feel like in the U.S., there is a big difference between libertarians in the US and libertarians in Latin America, because we become libertarian because that's the only option we have. Like we want our countries to be successful, and that is not going to happen with socialism. So And we are more like focused on free markets and how we can make more people come and invest if we have like a government that is not doing their job. So kind of like that. Meanwhile, in the US is like very like I have met some people in the US that were saying very, very controversial and super conservative stuff. And they take like all the conservative part of libertarian, and they are like, I'm libertarian, but they're not, they're conservatives. It's different. So I want to tell you this story. Like, I met this like old man in Washington. I was in it was like a social for one of the events of a libertarian event that I attended to. It was not this time. It was like 2 years ago. And this man comes to me and he's like, I believe that divorce should not be a thing. And I think if you marry someone, you should stay with them forever. And also, I think that we should illegalize same-sex marriage. And I was like, oh my God, because I was like, oh my God. And he was calling himself a libertarian, and I do not agree with anything that he said. So that was the first time I realized that libertarians in US means something to like completely different. Like, it could be something completely different. So, but yeah, coming to your thing about Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged, actually, it's really interesting that the CEO of Prospera really loves Atlas Shrugged, and he got inspired by Atlas Shrugged to build Prospera. And also, one of the locations in Prospera, it's called Saint John's Bay because of John Galt.
Interesting.
So that's just
Interesting.
like really like a fun fact about Prospera.
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate that. So I think it's interesting to watch. And I think also, I'm curious as to what you think about this. One of the things that I think makes libertarianism, I think, more interesting is that in an age where both information and now money can transfer without government permission over the internet, I don't know that any other system, I don't know that any, it's going to be very dangerous to not be a part of a free market system, because essentially at that point you're in a way sort of cutting yourself off from the opportunities that the internet will provide. So I think also this is my take on what I see in Latin America, or just generally speaking, my thoughts on sort of the left-right dynamic and why more people are gravitating towards libertarianism, at least in some of the worlds that I run in, is that in the past you sort of had like the state versus the private enterprise. And Latin America was very much taken advantage of by American private enterprise, by North American, United States private enterprise. So I could see why people would say, okay, well, we need the state to protect us from that then, right? Like if the United States is going to come in and implement, like the United Fruit Company in Guatemala or something like that, and just extract our resources, well, we need protection. So then the only thoughts are like, well, we would need the state. But I think what the internet does now is it gives you the opportunity, or somebody in Latin America, the opportunity to now start their own business, to sort of get some of that money that might get invested within communities in Latin America or within places in Latin America, where you can sort of do business on your own and be a beneficiary of some of that money or some of those institutions that are coming in to do work. I also think that I don't know enough about this to be honest, but I think that there's different types of businesses coming in now. Like it's not just US corporations coming in to extract resources. There's people, even like myself, I find it interesting as somebody who does this podcast to speak with somebody in Honduras, because I think I can learn something from you, and the people listening to this podcast can learn something from you. So there's this different mutuality in the exchange at this point where value accrues to hopefully both parties. And I don't think that really existed in the world before the internet, at least not as much. So I think the internet is what gives people this perspective of like, okay, well, we have the state and then we have the corporation, but then we sort of have something a little bit different, like this independent entrepreneurship, freedom technology loving group of people who want to take advantage of that. And I think this is sort of where the startup city Bitcoin crowd fits into. I don't know, you know, if you agree with that take or if it makes sense, but I think that's also,
Totally. I think it's good. Like, for example, Prospera coming to Honduras, it's good for Hondurans because one of the laws in Prospera is that 90% of the employees have to be Honduran.
Love
so
it.
It's not like they can come and they can just hire people from, you know, like 80% of the employees are going to be like foreigners. So it's like giving also this opportunity to 100 people to have to access to better jobs. Because one of the things about Roatan, it's a tourism island. So I didn't grow up here, but I can imagine myself growing up here and thinking, oh my God, I will have to work for tourism because that's my only option. There were not other jobs. Like, you know, majority of the jobs were in tourism industry. And what if I don't like that? So now with Prospera, you have an option to work in various industries, like whatever you want. Like they are hiring architects, they're hiring engineers, they're hiring executive assistants, all kinds of jobs internationally. So basically everyone that comes here, they work remotely, but they have an office based in Prospera. So I think that is really great because also the salaries are so much better than what the minimum salary in Honduras pays. And it's just like also something else besides tourism. And also they're hiring a lot of people from mainland that they can come and relocate to Prospera, which is what I did. When I was hired, I was not hired immediately by the Bitcoin Education Center. I was hired by Prospera first. And I relocated to Roatan, and it was such a great opportunity to me at that moment because I was just starting to work officially, and I started to work with this U.S. company, and I was getting paid really good in comparison to my classmates that were working for Honduran jobs. So it was really good, and that's why I always talk about this. Like whenever I have the chance with my friends from mainland, with everyone in my Twitter, like Prospera is good for Hondurans. Like it's literally something that could save us, and it's especially good for the young people in Honduras, which is the majority at the moment, because if you're a young adult that is just starting, you know, their work experience, this is a great place to start, and also a great place to live. Like, who wouldn't want to live on a Caribbean island?
A former pirate island. I mean, come on, get to have pirate descendant coworkers. The whole thing. It's amazing. And just something I just want to say to anyone watching or listening. You know, I think a lot of what gets discussed, especially now in New York City, is the immigrant crisis. So we have like 10,000 undocumented immigrants coming into the city every month. So you have people who are coming here sort of desperate, who are, you know, don't really have a ton of skills, coming into one of the most expensive cities in the world to live. And obviously more and more of that is unsustainable. So one of the reasons that I'm really fascinated in what Zosella is doing is that opportunities around the world, I don't just say this for maybe Central American people who want to migrate to the States, and if they do, that's fine too, but we need people thinking the way that the people of Prospera are thinking, because we can develop opportunities within countries. I've witnessed a lot of this in the circular economies, but you know, we're witnessing this amazing trend where someone as big, a bigger name of, you know, Vitalik Buterin, who started Ethereum, or Balaji Srinivasan, a gigantic name in the Bitcoin crypto tech space, longevity, startup city space, all those spaces, he's in all the spaces, you know, now going to Honduras because there's this this opportunity happening. And I know that some people are going to quickly dismiss this. They'll probably say, oh, it was just some foreigners that came in and they're exploiting the people. I can just say this, and I'm going to give you the final word on this. It's not what that feels like to me. That's from an outside perspective. So please, if you don't mind, a sort of a last thought comment on that. Is there any of that going on? Do you feel like it's just, in a way, trying to exploit cheap labor, cheap property? Is there any of that going on or no?
Not at all. Like, honestly, of course, if they are hiring outside of their country, it's because they're trying to cost to lower their costs.
Yeah.
And it makes sense, you know. But they're not paying bad. Like, for Honduran standards, they're not. They're paying good. They're paying for somebody that will live good with this salary in Honduras. And also, they're giving the opportunity to this talent in Honduras, because there's so many smart people here. Like, I cannot believe that. You know, even all of my friends, they're super, super smart. And I couldn't imagine them working for a Honduran company that is treating them bad, and because that's the only option they have. So for me, it's like they're bringing opportunities and they're not paying bad. And it's a really good work environment and a really good place to live. So I don't understand. So many people says what you're saying right now, but I think one of the reasons is because, you know, this whole history that you mentioned, like the fruit company, and we have books that we read on school, like obligatory by the government. That these books are, there's one that is called Prisión Verde, and it talks about, like, you know, the Banana Republic and how these companies were so like evil, and they were like doing coups all the time. And obviously, like, if you grew up telling, if you grow up with these stories that are telling you how this foreigner people that are coming here are evil, then you're going to believe it your whole life. But it's also your fault, because you don't get the chance to, you know, get to read about it, get to know, go there, apply for a job and see what it's like. Like, just like as an experiment. And then you will see that is really nice. And when I was working with Prosper, I remember that they had these like healthy Wednesdays, and they would give us like a lot of fruits. We would do like a yoga class in the middle of the day. And I was like, oh my God, and people are really saying that we're being exploded.
Yeah.
Because we're like with little fruit doing yoga, like, and it's a normal Wednesday. This was every Wednesday. I don't know if they're still doing it, but I was like, this is a joke. Like, how people actually think we're being exploded. It's a joke. So yeah, I want to say that it's really not how, like, whenever you see so many misinformation about something, it's better if you go and read, or if you go and see it yourself. And that's why I also encourage you again to come and see it yourself, because I think you're going to really love it.
Yeah, I have a feeling that that will happen within the next, I know this sounds like a long time frame, but like 20 months, so a little over a year. This year, I know that I have a few things I have to do. I don't know if I can definitely make it, but I'm super excited. I actually even spoke with Yvette, who will be a future guest on this podcast. Yvette and Zusel are very good friends, I think best friends. Someone else I met at the student at LibertyCon, she actually showed me, like, here are the flights that you take to get there and all that kind of stuff. So I have done my homework on how to get there, and will get there, hopefully. I would love to come for an event or something that you guys have going on, because it is super fascinating to me. And again, you know, I like seeing this stuff with my own eyes, because it's not, then you get the vibe, you get to soak it in. Does it feel like you're sitting around watching people be exploited? Does this seem like, you know, something malicious is going on here? You know, and I've gotten to some places where I felt that that was the case, and other places where I'm like, no, you know, this is just something different. It's a different dynamic. And I think that people are very slow to adapt to new dynamics. But people like yourself and others around the world doing similar work are ushering in a new world with new dynamics. And hopefully, like you said, a world where like the tagline for this podcast is Bitcoin and human flourishing. And not that the two have to be completely mutual, but we are focused on human flourishing. And like you said, if something like this didn't exist, you'd have to watch some of your very bright friends go and work in a place that is not going to necessarily highlight their strengths or bring out the best in them. And yeah. Not that Prospera guarantees it will, but it's better than maybe what the other options were before this. And then hopefully that empowers these people to help provide similar opportunities for other people. And we build something from the ground up that ripples out. Yeah.
Like in my case, I never thought that I would be working for a Bitcoin education center. It was like so random that I started doing this. And even my family was like, what the hell? Bitcoin is dangerous. But I have doing my work in Orange, peeling them, so they're coming along now. But yeah, that definitely it seems like if you see it from the outside, and you're someone that is not educated in Bitcoin or anything, it does seem like a crazy thing to do, totally. Like for a living. but you know, it's just like it has been the most amazing thing that it has happened to me in my professional amazing. Life. Like I get to go to international events because I have this job, and I get to travel and to talk about Bitcoin, talk about freedom, because that's what Bitcoin means to me. It means freedom, and you are free to do whatever you want with your money without the government being on top of it. And I love that feeling. I think money and state should be separated and should be two different things and not together. I also believe everything that I say, so that's also good, because when you have a job and you are forced to say things that you do not agree with, it just really sucks. But yep. When you believe everything that you're saying, it's just, I think it's the best that you could have.
100%. That's a beautiful, beautiful thought. And we will end it there. As I mentioned, we will have Zusel's friend on, I believe, probably within the next few episodes to sort of expand a little bit on what some of these other cities like Prospera look like around the world. She actually works in sort of the development of startup cities and special economic zones around the world. This has become very, very fascinating to me, especially, I think, as I've become a little bit more disillusioned with my own city, New York, which was once the financial capital of the world, which is very quickly becoming just basically, you know, a very bureaucratic place that's just working to protect the old financial guard, which is Wall Street. And we all know that there's a better financial world out there than Wall Street, less of an insider's game. Not that Bitcoin is perfect, and not that all of these new systems are perfect, but there's a little less rot in these new systems. There's a little bit more, you know, we're still early in them and people are still benefiting greatly from them. So where can people find you online? Where can they find information on you, on Prospera, on Amityage, anything else, and anything else you'd like to share?
Yes, you can look for Amityage online. Maybe you can put it. Or
I will in the show notes for everybody to read.
Amityage.com. You can see also that we will be doing tours. If you want to come to visit and to experience it yourself, you need to. We're going to be launching the Bitcoin Pirate Whoa. Tours. Which nice. Is going to be really awesome. So look us up. And me, I am like, it's Zusel in Twitter. Or X is the best way to find me. And cool. If you want to talk to me, just DM me and we can have a chat. I am available. So yeah, thank you again for having me in your podcast.
Yeah. Oh, it's my pleasure. And it was a pleasure to meet you in person. Thank you for doing this. And I look forward to meeting you on your home turf sooner than later. And on that note, yes. Thank you everybody for listening. I hope you guys took as much from this as I did, and we will talk soon. All right, take it easy.